Hi, I'm Zuby from Magic with Zuby, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Hello and welcome to Undaunted, where each episode I talk with fellow podcasters from all walks of life and discuss what went well, what went wrong, and what just didn't matter. We'll share the good, the bad, the many laughs and lessons along the way. I'm Amos, and today I'm joined by Cody Goff. The listeners of this show are going to get tired of me saying this, but this is one of those shows I've really been looking forward to. How are you doing today, Cody?
Oh, well, thank you. I did not expect that kind of reception. I'm just fantastic. I'm just dandy.
Now you've done, how many podcasts have you done now?
How many podcasts have I run or like guested on? I mean, I have, I guess, kind of quote unquote owned, you could probably say 4 podcasts over the last decade or so, and guest starred on a number beyond that is going to be vague and I will not be able to specify.
Some non-zero number.
I've been around the podcasting space. I mean, I actually studied radio and television production in college. So my intro into the whole audio space was actually running my college radio station my junior and senior year. Hmm. And so talking into a microphone has been somewhat natural for me for, again, the better part of a decade or more than a decade, I guess. So, I've had some time to make my mark on various corners of the podcasting world.
Now, when did you first start podcasting? Like, you've been in the game for a while.
So it was around 2010 or 2011. And the very specific reason why I started podcasting was because I had moved to Chicago in 2007 and I started taking improv classes. And just because someone recommended them, she said, a great way to meet people is to take improv classes. So you should do that. And in Chicago is the improv capital of the world. We've got Second City here and IO and Annoyance and Comedy Sports and all these other.
Oh, yeah.
And there's hundreds of theaters here. So I took some classes at Second City and I loved it. Started taking more and more classes and I loved them. And I'm a couple years into the whole taking improv class deal. And I was also working part-time at WGN Radio, producing a show on overnights. And I got some airtime there, and I got some stage time in my classes, and I got a little bit of performance experience and enjoyment in that time of my life, but I wasn't owning anything. And my problem at that exact time, I remember very specifically, was if I want to be in a show, I need to audition and be cast. If I want to do something on Brian's show, I'm doing something for Brian's show. I can create certain things, but it's never going to be my show. And I want to own something that I do that's creative and performative that I have the capacity to own end to end. And right around that time, my roommate at the time actually, and separately, my friend John from high school both approached me and said, hey, we should do a podcast. And knowing that I had some radio background and I knew how to edit audio and I knew how to talk into a mic, it was kind of a no-brainer. So that's when and why I started podcasting is because I wanted to fill the performance niche in my life. And also at that time, that's when I started. So my first podcast was Unqualified Gamers, which I did with my friend John. And that's, again, so 2011-ish, I want to say. So it's 6 or 7 years or so I've been kind of doing my own podcasting.
That's and why gaming? I mean, it seems like everybody goes to gaming now, but back then it was all tech news.
So good question. It's actually funny. At the time as I was an aspiring actor in the city, I didn't want to be shoehorned into a particular niche. And in fact, my roommate at the time wanted to do some kind of geek or nerd podcast. He'd be like, we should be the Nerd Friends or the Geek Crew or something like that. And I refused to brand myself as that because I was auditioning for all these different roles and I didn't want to just be the nerdy guy. Hey guys, I'm the nerdy guy. I wear the glasses and I make Star Trek references. And like, I just didn't want to be shoehorned into this, you know, narrow cast into this, I didn't want to be written into a corner, basically, which is kind of ironic because now I'm on the Gonna Geek Network and I'm all about that. But at the time, it was really strongly against that. However, my friend John wanted to do a video game podcast. And at the time, we were both playing a lot of video games. So it kind of made sense because when you get into podcasting, and any new podcaster should know this, you have to have a niche. You're narrow casting. You're talking to an audience with a very specific thing in mind. And mm-hmm. if your podcast description is two guys who are friends who joke around about stuff, that is not compelling to anybody. And it's going to be really hard to accumulate any audience, and it's going to be really hard to maintain that audience. So what our specific angle was we were unqualified gamers, and that meant that we are two guys who love talking about video games who have no business talking about video games. And we specifically would review games and give it the context of who we were. So at the time, let's say it might be, I'm a 26-year-old single guy living in a big city, and I'm working three jobs, and I don't have time to play video games. So if I have 6 hours a week, what are some good games to play? Or John might say, I just got married. We're expecting our firstborn child in three months. What can I play while also being able to pause the game really quickly and run over and take care of my crying baby or my screaming wife if she gets upset? His wife is very lovely. She's very nice. She doesn't scream. But hypothetically. So, and we called the unqualified gamers because that was our thing. And my thing was like, we're not going to try to book, let's say, Hideo Kojima or something from Konami. We're not going to try to say, oh, we're going to get this big interview with this big famous game developer, because there's already too many outlets for that. IGN is doing that. Game Trailers is doing that. 1UP is doing that. I mean, everyone's already doing that.
Right.
If you want your big blockbuster interviews, you're going to go to GameInformer.com or GameSpot. Like, you're going to go to one of 15 conglomerate media empires that get press passes and have budgets to fly people to and from E3. We're never going to compete with that. So that was our niche, is we're going to give you the context of exactly who we are with no special guests. And that kind of fed itself into the whole unqualified brand. So that's kind of why we went that direction.
And it's nice to have something like that going on, because then you can still get sort of that improv feel to it, because you're taking on another role. You're taking on, you're not yourself. You're ad-libbing a different role or different experience in trying to experience it through those eyes.
Yeah, it was especially fun with John, because I've known John for more than 25 years, and we were pretty much best friends in second grade, and we've always been a part of each other's lives, and so our rapport is really good. And one of the defining moments for me in all of my podcasting career is somebody wrote a review on iTunes. We only got like 8 reviews ever for our show, but the review said that one of their favorite things about our show is that we kind of had a straight man, non-straight man, not sexually, but you know what I mean? Like the guy that plays it straight and then the goofy one,
right?
Like any classic duo, Laurel and Hardy, you know, whatever. But the thing is that in our dynamic, we would shift who is the straight man and who wasn't, and we would just do it in a natural flow, and it would go back and forth like that. And it was true. Like, you know, you can listen back to, they're all on unqualifiedgamers.com. I don't know if it's working right now, but they're all still online. I'll give you the website when we get to my next podcast, but
they are available in Overcast, I can tell you that.
Oh, are they? Oh, wonderful. Cool.
Because that's how I listen to them.
But they're good. If you go back and listen, they're funny. Like, legitimately, I've gone back and I'm like, wow, we really, you can just tell we've known each other a long time and it's funny. So it really worked for us, and it was it was a good way to entertain. But then fast forward, we did it for 4 years, I think. We did 127 episodes. The goal was to be weekly, and that didn't always work because life. And we ended up rebranding because we realized we don't have time to play video games anymore. And I can talk about the rebrand in a little bit. But basically, at the time, what we realized was we had people who were listening to us because they liked our banter and our dynamic, who didn't care about video games. Like, my sister doesn't play video games, and she would listen because she thought we were funny. So that's why we kind of started to steer the ship away from gaming per se and go into other areas, because we got feedback from people and we listened to it because it was like, this is what people like. Okay, well, are we focused on that? Well, no. Okay, well, let's figure out
steer into the audience, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, you had to call it an end to one, and you rebranded into a whole nother show. How did that conversation go with your co-host? How'd that go? Like, who started that and decided this is what we're gonna do, and we're gonna do it now?
John and I talked about it for a long time. The thing with us was that we were just not playing new games. I mean, I talked about Hearthstone for like 7 weeks straight, and
this is how Hearthstone applies to this, and this is
yeah, it was pretty terrible. Well, and there was another game, I think it was Metal Gear Solid 5. I played 220 some hours of Metal Gear Solid 5, but that was the main game that I played for 4 or 5 months. As an adult, I don't have the time to just binge that in a month or whatever. So we just weren't playing as many games, and we started talking, and we're like, should we rebrand? Should we do something else? He expressed interest in wanting to talk outside of video games. I was on board. I was like, you know, we're not really talking about, we don't have time to review video games every week, but we can talk about games. So let's try to rebrand. And the only name we agreed on was Game Life Balance, like work life balance, but with games. It was literally the only name we would agree on. Like, we went back and forth for weeks and nothing. So I Googled Game Life Balance, and of course it's taken, because every name for every podcast ever is taken. I don't know if you know this.
it's a bit of a theme on this show of how hard it is to get not only the name of your podcast that isn't previously a podcast or a defunct musical group, but also you got to get the Twitter handle and the Facebook page, and don't forget to get the logo that doesn't look like anybody else's, and now that you have an idea and you have a niche that you want to pursue, and you have a co-host or a method of solo hosting that really appeals to you and you're passionate about it, now the creativity starts, because now you got to brand your stuff.
That's very true. Very true. Also, making sure you're not infringing on a trademark or a copyright is important, so no one sues you, because that's another concern as well.
Right.
So at this point, I think I'll give your listeners at least one takeaway. I have like kind of two or three kind of key takeaways from my podcast journey. I should have started with this, that hopefully people can kind of take and be like, oh, okay, this is an extra thing podcasting can do for me. So Game Life Balance, the name. So here's takeaway number one, never be afraid to ask. So I check out gamelifebalance.com. It's these two Australian dudes who were very funny, and I check out their most recent episode. And what do you know? They say in the episode, this will be our last episode. Okay, perhaps indefinitely. He said, you know, maybe we'll come back next year. Maybe we'll never come back. Who knows? But, you know, this is all for now, because one of the hosts was having a kid. It's just like, all right, cool. So I messaged him and I said, hey, this is random. I'm an American. And I heard your podcast and it's funny. Can we have your name? that was basically the conversation. So I got a reply from AC. It's hosted by Robin and AC. AC is the kind of the main guy that communicates with me. Rob does a lot of the production stuff. Both terrific guys who I feel like I know because I listen to their show all the time now. So they come back with, you know, we want to keep the name, because we do think we are going to start in a few months, but it'd be cool. We can change our name to Game Life Balance Australia, and you can be Game Life Balance US. So I'm like, that's fine. So we did it. And I asked my friend Megan to make a logo for us, and so we both use the same logo. They kind of quote-unquote own the trademark, I guess. I guess one of them actually did have a trademark filed in Australia, so they do have a legal ownership to it, but like, we became buds. Like, I tweeted these guys. One of them joked actually on Twitter about crashing my wedding, and because I'm getting married this year, and I literally said, dude, if you showed up, you'd be welcome. Like, That's awesome. These are cool guys. Like, we struck up this really cool friendship just because I was just like, yeah, let's do this. And now I've got two guys. Like, if I ever go to Australia, I literally will probably stay with one of those guys.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. That's what the internet was built for, but not enough people do that kind of thing.
Now, I did at one time when I was trying to come up with the original name for this show, I did reach out to people who had a podcast that went defunct in like 2012. And I tried every possible way of getting a hold of everyone involved with it, like even past guests, like, oh, this guy's been a guest like 3 times. And I never got any response at all, ever. And then I was left with the mental debate of, well, it's been like 5 years. Three, 4 years at the time. Do I just assimilate that and just move on and just say, hey, you know what? You left on the ground. I'm picking it up and running with it. Or do I find something else? And that's when Undaunted came to me. And I was like, well, this, okay, now. And actually, the name came to me because I was designing the logo. Like, I didn't even have a name. I was just designing the logo. Like, I had this idea, and then the name Undaunted, the Undaunted podcast, came to me, and I was like, oh, let me just type this in here as a placeholder. And 2 weeks later, it was done. It was there. That's what it was.
So, nice.
And now I don't even remember what the original name was.
yeah. You know, part of me, and part of it is like, would you rather beg forgiveness or ask permission?
Yeah.
And in this particular case, yeah, part of me was tempted to just say, like, screw it. I mean, they don't have so the website is owned by some squatter in Denmark or something that would sell it for $10,000 or something stupid. So,
like all the good websites.
Yeah, so there's no GameLifeBalance.com. We're GameLifeBalance.us. They're GameLifeBalanceAustralia.com, but whatever.
More the compromise.
But it is one of those questions. And the thing is, like, as more and more people use the internet and more and people just make stuff, I mean, like I said, I think every 3 to 5 letter acronym in the alphabet is taken for a .com at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I think. I may totally just be making that up. But it's just like, I mean, there's just too many people, you know, to be unique. So I don't know. So we reevaluated and we decided we would put the show in the direction of, well, now we're adults. How do we fit games into our adult lives? And our episode would be about half kind of, sometimes we would do a full video game review. So what I liked about the brand switch was that it gave us the capability, if we wanted to go deep into reviewing a video game, we could still do that. But for the most part, what we would just kind of do is talk about our lives and kind of what we've been up to and adventures in adult life, like crazy trips we took or whatever. And that kind of, that's how that kind of evolved, but that also hit a peak. And, the peak was that it's hard to talk. It's kind of rare that a person can just sit there and talk about his or her life and have it be really interesting.
Right. You've got to be living an extraordinary life to have something interesting about your life on a regular basis.
Right. I mean, you know, like last weekend I rented an RV and drove to the middle of Washington State to see Guns N' Roses. And that's great.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
And that could be cool to some people, but a lot of people have seen Guns N' Roses. A lot of people have driven in RVs. A lot of people have attended concerts. And yeah, there's elements of individuality. Like, I'm sure that not that many people have done the exact same trip that I did. You know, I went to a dispensary in Seattle just to check it out before we went. And
I was going to say, how many people have rented an RV and found a kilo of hashish in the back? Like, that's the story you need to tell.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And you can't tell those stories without being tracked down by the FBI. So that's a little challenging.
It's only because it was their hashish. I mean,
mm-hmm.
We want our hash back.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and to me, when I started podcasting in the first place, part of the idea was I'm a radio guy. I've got my foot in the door at WGN Radio producing this show. I've been producing that show for 8 years, and I love it. But like, I'm not going to be the morning show host at some station based on my current job. So part of it was like, well, if we do this podcast on video games and we grow it, I ran Google AdWords ads. I did a lot of social media marketing for it. I did lots of different pushes and networking and guesting on other shows and things like that. And after a while, it was like, okay, well, after year two, we still only have double-digit listeners. After year three, we've got maybe triple-digit listeners, but questionable because analytics are really terrible. And, you know, there was always this possibility of like, okay, well, if and when we hit a tipping point and we get 5,000 listeners an episode or something like that and we start to really grow, then we can kind of market it and focus on it. And then it becomes like a major focus for my kind of broadcasting trajectory of my career or whatever. But like, we never really just got that. And once we switched to Game Life Balance, our show became even less marketable because it was so just kind of focused on what we've been up to. It became mostly for our friends. And it worked. It was fun. And there are good episodes. But it's like one of the hardest things to me about podcasting is constantly reevaluating what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Right.
And that's really, really, really challenging.
And it's not just challenging because you're looking at a project that you're vested in, but you also have a partner that you're doing it with or multiple partners. You're looking at how is this particular thing affecting the rest of my life and my other projects? What's it adding to? What's it taking away? The time I'm putting into it, am I really getting anything out of it? And I mean, we'll get to some of that a little bit later. But yeah, no, I understand completely because every time I'm up past midnight editing Ritual Misery or, you know, editing this show, those thoughts keep coming to my mind. Like, is this really worth it for the listener base that I have and the feedback I'm getting, is this where I want it to be? But obviously you've reached that point a few times.
Yeah. And here's one other thing. And this is my second big takeaway tip for podcasters that should have actually been my first one.
I need stingers. I need tip number one.
Right. But a main thing you talked about, you know, is it worth what I'm putting into it and what am I getting out of it? So, right around the time I started my podcast, I was hired to be a social media coordinator for a marketing agency. I was the first social media coordinator they had. In fact, at the time I was interviewing for a few different jobs. My first full-time job had been kind of in the marketing field. So I was just kind of feeling out different marketing jobs. And the social media one kept coming up. I interviewed three different places that all told me, we don't exactly know what you'll be doing because we've never had a social media coordinator before. Because this was back in 2012 when social media was reaching a really huge critical tipping point where brands and businesses started looking around and being like, dude, we need a Facebook page. Right. We need a Twitter account. We need a strategy. We need to figure out how to connect with consumers and sell more using social media because that's where people are spending all of their time. Mm-hmm. So it was really growing thing. So I get hired over at this agency, and I'm just starting, and we're just starting the podcast. And John says, well, are we going to make a Facebook page? And boldly, I said, no. And here's why. Because at that time, what I needed, you got to take a step back and look at what you need in your life and what can add value to your life and to your skill set. And I stepped back and I said, all right, right now I'm managing social media for a marketing agency, and I have to be able to tell clients what they should be doing on social, which means I have to be very familiar with the major social media platforms, all right? Facebook and Twitter, everyone is more or less familiar, all right? I know how to work Facebook. I know how to work Twitter. Mm-hmm. We can handle this. Instagram, I just got on. Okay, cool. What else is on the market that a client might ask about that I need to have an answer for and not sound like an idiot that I can say, here's what you do. I know what I'm doing.
Right.
I was not on Tumblr at the time. I was not on, and you'll laugh, but I was not on Google Plus at the time, which at that time in 2012, you have to remember, was relatively new and which hadn't been declared totally dead yet. Like there was still right. some possibility there. It was new and people didn't know what would happen with it. I was not on Reddit. I didn't understand Reddit. So what I did with our podcast is I'm not going to sit at work during my day job on Google Plus and Tumblr. Like this is just not a thing that is allowed in a marketing job. But what I can do is I can say on Unqualified Gamers, hey, check us out on Tumblr at videogamepodcast.tumblr.com. Follow us on Google Plus. I made accounts for our podcast on those and I started to promote there. And we actually got a reasonably good following on Google Plus. We actually met some of our listeners off of there, both on podcasts and physically. If they've come through Chicago, I've met a couple of them, and made some really cool connections. But it also was bolstering my skill set, and it really rounded out my like career. And the thing is, there's so many careers that this applies to. Designing, like, are you a designer and you like to make logos and things like that, or you're just, you know, starting your career looking for agency jobs or something, you can design stuff, you know, the graphics, web design. Oh my God. You know, the level of how deep you can get into that is ridiculous. Right. Whether you're, even if you're just learning how to manage an RSS feed and even how to embed a Libsyn player somewhere on a website, like all of these things that you're learning about while learning how, while, you know, while making your podcast, all of these things are marketable career professional skills. And if you're a person like me and you end up working in a marketing agency or at a startup or at certain other agencies or certain other companies that maybe don't have a lot of structure or are on the smaller side, and you can present yourself as kind of a Swiss Army knife of an employee, and you can say, yeah, if you need help with X, Y, or Z, I have experience in all of these areas. Mm-hmm. That's hugely helpful. So, I mean, just alone from Unqualified Gamers, I learned, I became a pro at Google Plus. I still use it. I know how Tumblr works now, which honestly was the hardest network I had to manage. I'm a regular Redditor, and all these other things. And these have all come into play and come in handy. Even YouTube, even just converting my podcast audio into videos, putting it on YouTube, running ads on YouTube, right, running ads on Google. Like, oh my God, like suddenly you could be a paid search manager for a brand or a paid, you know, a paid like advertiser and running your self-serve campaigns. Like, I know how to set up a Facebook targeting campaign, and you only need $10 to do it, by the way. Like, right, if you want to test any of these things, if you're listening and you have a podcast and you have $10, you can go to YouTube and you can set up a whole campaign with $10 and you can get a few hundred clicks to your site, and now you know how to run an ad campaign on YouTube. That's like a thing.
And if you get a you know, 5-10% turnaround on that, and you know, that's not hurting anybody.
Exactly, right? You're suddenly, yeah, you're helping, and all of this is self-serving, right? All of this is to promote my podcast that I want people to come to. But at the same time, I'm gaining all these skills now that it's just ridiculous. Like, you know, even as little as, even as simple as using Google Drive and a shared document to plan episodes with John, it's just like any of that stuff. Anything right. you do becomes part of your skill set.
Your first podcast sounds awesome. You know, you're doing some improv, some gaming stuff. Life changes. You reevaluate what you're doing as far as a podcast goes, and you move on. Now you're doing a new podcast, but eventually that gets reevaluated as well.
Kind of yes and no. So I more or less professionally got struck by lightning this summer, actually. I just talked at excessive length, probably, about all these skills that I got from podcasting, right? So mm-hmm. my LinkedIn profile, this summer I was managing social media for a global management consulting firm. I had a nice cushy social media manager job, and I'm just chugging along and kind of doing my thing. But I also am interested in podcasting, so I put that on my LinkedIn profile. You know, I mentioned, yeah, I'm full-time here, but I also do part-time radio, and I also do a podcast, and I contribute to the Gunna Geek Network, and, you know, I've got these other set of skills. So, you know, if you're interested in a conversation, I'm always happy to answer questions and things like that. Pretty innocently. Like, I'm not expecting a lot, but mm-hmm. I like people to know that I'm not just a guy who, you know, wears dress pants and a dress shirt and goes into an office and works, he sits at a desk all day writing tweets and stuff and doing social media strategy. I want people to know that I've got this personality side. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not just a marketer, but I'm a guy that does podcasts and stuff like that. You know, I have a lot of interests. So completely out of the blue, I got a message from the CEO of a startup. And he was like, hey, some people have been talking to us about starting a podcast. I've got a couple questions. Can I give you a call? I was like, yeah, sure. What the heck? I'll answer your questions. I'm willing to be helpful. And we hop on the phone, and I won't get into details because it is now my current job. But basically with a span of a few weeks, I was able to present myself as kind of a Swiss Army knife to this company that's smaller. It's got about 20 employees. It's a smaller company, and ended up with a job there. And part of that job is doing their podcast. And so I am producing and hosting and promoting and editing and everything the Curiosity podcast for curiosity.com.
Mm-hmm.
And that just that happened. And so I started to get the ball rolling on that. And also, I'm getting married this year. I know I mentioned that. But wedding planning, we're planning a pretty elaborate wedding. So not like $1 zillion or anything, but like we're going to have a nice wedding that's got a lot of planning. So suddenly I'm wedding planning. I already had all these travel plans this summer that I didn't anticipate all this stuff happening last year when I planned them.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly I've got a full-time podcasting thing where I'm making a podcast for my job. I literally just told John, I was like, dude, I'm sorry. Like, we got to stop for now. Like, I just do not have time. Mm-hmm. And there was no closure. There was no final episode. There was no, hey, here's our last one. We're going to take a break for a while. We literally stopped.
Was there a conversation about him continuing on without you?
Here's the thing. And this has been a little bit tricky to navigate. So I'm the one with all the production skills and did all the websites. So all those skills that I said that I built for mm-hmm. the podcast, John kind of did none of for the most part. And he'll cop to this. He did some stuff on Google Plus. He helped market us a bit. He does stuff on Twitter. So he's pretty active in certain ways, and he's done some solo episodes. But in terms of editing and posting all this stuff, that's really all been me on the production side. And part of that's my fault because I'm a control freak and I just like to do this stuff. Part of it is because he does have a wife and a kid, and you know that can be very demanding.
So labor defaults to the available co-host, essentially.
Labor defaults to the guy who just kind of is doing it. And I never made a really strong concerted effort to be like, listen, John, I need you to start doing this. And I could have.
Is that something that you wish you had done?
Well, it's tricky. It's kind of like, I want to make an analogy here. So the analogy that I want to make is, if you continually do something nice for someone, let's say, and you don't expect anything back and you don't ask for anything back, but once in a while, maybe this only happens to me, but maybe I think it probably happens to you and to lots of people. If you continually do something really nice for a person, or you feel like a person gets to enjoy a lot of benefits on account of you, and you don't expect anything back, and that's fine, once in a while you'll still get kind of mad that you're not getting anything back. This happens with roommates especially. I had nice furniture. I had a nice TV. I had an Xbox 360 and a bunch of games. I bought Halo 4 and I brought it home and I told my roommate, yeah, you can play this if you want. Well, I did not get to play Halo 4 for 3 weeks after I got it because I was so busy with work. I was working crazy hours. I was out of town on weekends. I was traveling. It was nuts. And he had beaten Halo 5 and Halo 4 leveled up a whole bunch on online on Xbox Live before I even got a chance to play the game. And on the one hand, yeah, I told him he could play it and he could do this. But on the other hand, this was like the sixth game he had done this with, and he'd never paid me a dollar.
Mm.
And I never expected or asked for anything. But at the same time, like, part of you is like, really? Why does this person get to get all this benefit and not put anything into it?
Right.
I don't think it's necessarily the most mature way to respond to something by any means, but it's the way that I kind of am. And that would happen to me and my roommate. I think some of that happened a little bit with me and John. I think that I produced all of it and I did a lot of it and he didn't put a lot of the production into it because he couldn't. Like, he doesn't know how to edit and audition and stuff like that. Like, he couldn't.
Right.
But at the same time, there's this like irrational kind of like annoyance at the fact that that's happening. But then it just kind of feeds itself. So it was like not healthy. And I wish I had a solution, but I don't even know the way out of that kind of cycle, if that makes sense.
I'm not only going to sympathize with you, but and because he listens to this show, I'm actually going to mention my own side of this. And I can completely empathize with everything you said, because that's exactly how it is on Ritual Misery. I designed the website. I designed the format. I created the show notes. I did all the basic layout of the 140 plus episodes we've done. Probably 90%, 95% of them I've done the post-production work on. When it comes to like getting guests and things like that on, doing the social media, that we've pretty much split that evenly. And there are definite times when I'm just like, you know what? I'm kind of burnt. I'm done doing this. We have this project we're doing together, but if I'm going to be doing 90%, 95% of the work, is this really worth it to me? And that's a lot of what the fight is with me anyway, is this worth it to me? And what it's done is caused me to condense my post-processing down as much as possible, to where last night we had a break, when we recorded last night, we had a breakage of internet. Like, my internet just died and then came back up. And of course, I'm hosting another friend of mine, Kent's out on a family trip, and doing all the editing, and I still got it done, including, you know, seaming the audio together and the video together and everything else, and got it published in under an hour and 45 minutes. Because
wow, nice.
I've been driven to get that done like that because I don't have time to sit there and just continue churning through and hating my co-host the entire time I'm doing it, wondering why he isn't doing it. But then when he does do it, then I'm all ticked off because he doesn't do it as good as I do.
Yeah, and I'm going to push back on you too a little bit. It is that, first of all, I think it's hard to work on a project with friends, right? Mm-hmm. Remember elementary school, right? You'd have your three best friends, but you get in a group project together and suddenly things just are not the right, right? I mean, a lot of people say don't mix business and pleasure, you know, stuff like that. Don't go into business with your wife, for example, or your, you know, whatever it is. Like, there's a lot of caution out there that is advised to, you know, regarding mixing work with your relationships and your friends and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I get that. And I think part of that is because it's really hard to define those roles. So, you know, both of our frustrations, I think, are partially due to us not setting the right expectations. You can always communicate better. Mm-hmm. I think that there were times when I was frustrated with just the way things were going in general, and I felt like I was putting too much work into it, but it was my fault that I was putting too much work into it.
Right.
So it was very irrational, you know? So and I'm the same way with John, you know, friends for 25 years, he's in my wedding party, and I don't have a big wedding party. He's only one of a couple people not in my family that's related to me that's in my wedding party. He's gonna be a groomsman. Right. You know, he's like always been one of the best friends, but yeah, it was a weird thing. And part of it is skills. Like I said, like, you know, I couldn't say like, oh, can you upload this to the website? Cause like, he has no idea how to do that. So could I say, hey, why don't you upload this to the website? Let me show you how. Please do this thing once a week. Like, yeah, I could do that, but I just didn't put in the effort. So it was this weird, like I'm a control freak and a perfectionist. So I want to do everything, but then I'm going to be mad that I'm doing everything. Like, it doesn't make any sense. It's very irrational. And all I can say to any podcasters out there that want to do it with their friends is just really clearly define the roles and tell the person immediately if you're frustrated about something, mm-hmm. and do it very directly.
Mm-hmm.
And don't do it over text. John and I love talking to John, but sometimes we'll have conversations over Google Hangouts and it's like during the workday, and it's just like we'd be violently in agreement, you know? We'd have those conversations where we're literally saying the same thing, but we're getting angry at each other for not saying it the same way.
Right, exactly. It's not always the message, it's how the message is relayed. Sometimes you're saying the same, it can almost be the same words, but you each of you are putting an emphasis on a different syllable.
Exactly, exactly. So it's a weird thing, but anyway, but the way Game Life Balance ended for now, and I think we are going to try to come back for at least occasional episodes after October.
After life calms down?
Yeah, after life calms down, if that ever happens. But, I mean, to be honest, I think that we are going to do like what you did. I mean, we're going to streamline that editing process. I think I'm just going to pull audio directly from YouTube. Usually he would record on his end, I'd record on my end. I would multi-track it, make sure it all synced up, put in an intro and outro, make it all fancy, and then pop it up. I think I'm just going to cut a lot of corners.
Mm.
But part of the reason I was doing all those things and writing nice comprehensive show notes and making everything all fancy and all that was because I thought we would grow an audience. And the idea was I'll put in show notes so we have search engine optimization so people can find us. And when people find us, they'll follow us, they'll listen to us, they'll subscribe, we'll have more subscribers, we'll grow an audience. You know, that was the whole purpose. So if I look at it and I go, well, I'm going to do this for fun with John, share it with friends, that's all we're going to do, I'm not going to slave over show notes for an hour every time I edit.
Right.
I'm not going to try and cut out the oohs and ums or whatever. I'm not going to care if the quality is slightly worse. When you do a two-person live Google Hangout and it's only two people, if you rip the audio after, the audio is almost CD quality.
Right.
It's actually very lossless. It used to not be that way, but in the last year or two, they switched something so that it's only if there are two people. If there's three, the quality immediately drops to more of a fuzzy quality.
You go from CD to AM radio.
Yeah, it does kind of. But literally, if it's just the two of us, just the two of him and me, all I have to do is kind of pop that. I can just rip the audio and that'll be it. So anyway, we'll streamline and we'll adjust some things, but that's just the way it'll be. But yeah, I told him, like, man, listen, I just can't do it right now. And it wasn't because I was mad at him or there were hard feelings or anything like that. Like, I thought our podcast was good. But now I'm podcasting, like, I mean, I'm in an editing room all day. I'm writing show notes, I'm writing articles, I'm doing a lot of things. I produce a lot of content for Curiosity. I'm writing our articles, I'm doing the podcast, I'm doing lots of different things. It's not like I'm just like recording one podcast a week and then kind of chilling out and I'm like, yeah, all right, that was fun. No, I like do everything. Like we're all kind of a Swiss Army knife at the company, mm-hmm. of 15, 20 different skills that we can employ to kind of help grow this really, really cool, interesting brand and everything.
And very importantly, you're producing quality content. It's not just a hodgepodge of stuff thrown in together. It's very, because I mean, I don't have people on the show without doing some research about them first, you know, what they're involved in, what they used to do, things like that, listen to some shows. And that's one thing that struck me is even in your personal shows, the shows that you had done before, you know, it's still quality content. You're still putting something out there. There's still a bit of a message behind it and a certain level of quality that you put out. And now that you're doing it for Curiosity, it's like, it's top notch quality at this point. And you can tell you've honed your skills in the past to get to where you're doing what you're doing now.
Yeah. Thank you. Christopher Michael was a newsman at WGN Radio when I started. And before I started hosting stuff, I asked him, how do you be a host? And he said, hey, listen, if you want to get good on a microphone, here's what you do. Sit in front of a microphone for 30 minutes and talk. Okay. That's the easy part. And just see if you can talk for 30 minutes and not run out of things to say or not run out of places to go. Cool. He goes, that's the easy part. Now the hard part, listen back to it.
Yeah. No, you're not kidding.
Yeah. And honest to God, I have listened to, I think, every episode of, you know, and that was a perk of being the guy doing the editing and posting, was I was forced to listen back to every episode. And you really do start to notice the takes that you have and the habits that you form and even the things your co-host does that drive you crazy.
Now, this is one thing that I do. I listen to my podcast typically at 1.5 speed, unless it's a new show or it has a certain cadence, like 99% Invisible, I'll never speed that up because there's a very specific and deliberate cadence to that show.
Mm-hmm.
Shows where Justin Robert Young is on, I used to listen to it very deliberately and at normal speed, but now that I naturally hear his cadence in my head, so I'd go ahead and put that up to 1.5 speed. When I listen back to this podcast or any of the other shows that I produce, I always listen to it at a 1.5 speed. Because if you can't understand what I'm saying, because I have a tendency to mumble sometimes, if you can't understand what I'm saying at 1.5 speed, then you're not going to want to listen to the show.
Oh, that's smart.
So that's how I do my show notes, is while I'm rendering the video, I re-listen to the show at 1.5 speed while I'm doing the show notes. So there's only as many show notes in the show as I can type in while I'm listening to the show. So if we move on to another topic and I'm not done with putting that link in there, that link doesn't go. I move on to the next major topic. And that's kind of my workflow, and that's what's kept me. That's one of the things that I've done to condense my time down. And sometimes now that I'm producing the show immediately after recording Ritual Misery, I will actually just skip through because I'm familiar enough with the content that I know exactly where the links need to go and put them in there. And it just, instead of waiting a couple days and kind of like going back and listening to it with fresh ears, now I can go into it immediately and I already know half of where it's going to go, which I'm sure that introduces some mistakes, but it cuts my workload time in half. So
yeah, no, that's smart. I mean, anytime you find ways to make shortcuts, that's, yeah, lazy people are the most innovative. Basically, because they'll find a way to do it easier.
I'm sure that was a backhanded compliment, but I'll take it either way.
No, it wasn't intended for you. No, it's a saying. It's something like lazy people are the most efficient because, yeah, like, yeah, you give them a job to do and it takes 4 hours. They'll find a way to do it in one because they just don't feel like doing it for 4 hours.
Right. Exactly. Oh, man. So now we get into some of the really the kind of the meat of the podcast. We've got all this history. We now know your story and where you're coming from. We know some of the things that you've learned along the way and some of the changes that you've made. But now the big question, how do you measure your success? And more importantly, what grade would you give yourself?
That's a moving target, depending on the time. My measure of success for Unqualified Gamers, I think, was probably audience size. I give us an F for that. That was my initial measure for success. But then you get an iTunes review that says, "Hey, you guys are really funny. Here's why." Or you get a message on Google Plus that says, "Hey, I just discovered you guys because you spammed some group on Google Plus. And I listened to an episode, and now I've gone through your back catalog and listened to literally every episode." We had a guy literally go back and listen to all 76 of our first episodes just because he loved us. So did I consider it successful then? Yes. Oh, my God. I felt incredible. So the metrics you set aren't necessarily going to be what happens. And let yourself be surprised. And don't go into with it saying, "Listen, black and white, this is the one metric that's going to define success for me." Because if you don't get it, you'll just disappoint yourself. Go in saying, "I hope something cool happens," and then something cool happens. With Game Life Balance US transitioning into the new brand, it didn't accomplish exactly what I wanted to. What I thought would happen is we'll remove the video game focus from our podcast and we'll become more broadly appealing and it will be funnier and more accessible. But what happened was it became just a little bit more kind of pedestrian. Not pedestrian, but it just became very like,
You kind of overgeneralized. You opened it up so much that you were just another one of the shows.
I think maybe it overgeneralized a little, and it didn't hit exactly what I wanted it to. But now I've got these two guys in Australia. I listen, and I do recommend listening to Game Life Balance Australia. Their podcast is hilarious. I've got these two dudes. First of all, I found a podcast I like. They listen to us. Half of our first episodes are just us ribbing each other. I used to tweet at these guys constantly before Rob took a break from Twitter, but AC is still on there. I tweet at them all the time. I have like two friends in Australia, basically. Mm-hmm. And that's awesome. That's the coolest thing. So I don't consider Game Life Balance US a resounding success, but I consider what I got out of it really nice. Mm. Right now, my measure of success for the Curiosity Podcast is making sure I feel like I'm teaching people something interesting. I could probably spend an hour and a half ranting about my just burning hatred for mainstream media, especially 24-hour media.
Yeah.
CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, like all of those I think are like literally cancer. Yeah, I'm going to go there. And my idea of contributing something positive to the world is not screaming how terrible Donald Trump is on Twitter, because yeah, that's a good use of time, but using my platform to teach somebody something interesting about the world that is going to make them a stronger person. Your podcast is doing that. Like, your podcast does a great job of that. You're giving people insight into what other podcasters are doing. I think that's great. It reminds me of The Turnaround with Jesse Thorne. That's why I wanted to do this podcast. The Turnaround, I don't know if you've heard it. Have you listened to it?
I have not.
Phenomenal podcast. Well, I should back up. I think Jesse Thorne is literally the worst interview I've ever heard in my entire life. He is the worst interviewer. Like, I've literally physically cringed listening to some of his podcasts. I think he's awful. However, he did produce a series called The Turnaround with Jesse Thorne, something like 20 episodes or so. And he interviews interviewers. He interviews Larry King, Werner Herzog, Katie Couric, Ira Glass. And he interviews some big time Jerry Springer, some big time interviewer names. And you get some insight into how they approach interviews. So I listen to every episode because I wanted to learn how to become a better interviewer. And I hope that your listeners become better podcasters or more interested in podcasting or are able to approach it a little bit more intelligently, having gotten the perspective of people like me and Daniel J. Lewis and other people you've interviewed who have had differing podcasting journeys that some people can relate to. Like, I think there's value in this podcast and in podcasts like that. And I like to think there's value in the Curiosity podcast. So that, to me, is my measure of success, is have I talked to somebody who has something interesting to say that they can teach people about that will make them more educated and a more interesting person, basically. So, and that's my main thing. My secondary metric for success is making sure that I remain employed by making sure the podcast is marketable. But that's kind of that's the more business side of things. But
yeah, that's more of a life maintenance thing than a personal podcasting goal.
Yes, it very much is. It very much is. I don't know if people have asked you this on the podcast before, but what is your metric for success?
You talked about roaming values, the changing values. This show was originally conceived because I wanted a chance to talk to podcasters that were doing things better than I was doing. And I wanted to learn from them, but you can't just call a podcaster and be like, hey, I want you to divulge all your secrets, you know? But at the same time, I didn't want to be afraid to just point blank ask, hey, how many listeners do you have? Or what is your measure of success? Like, what is it that gets you going? So I decided, you know, if I do get this and I do reach out and I do get the input from these amazing podcasters from anywhere that you know, people that are doing stuff for profit or for charity or just because they got some spare time on Saturday, you know, like, if I'm going to take this, what am I going to do with it? Am I just going to hoard it all myself? Well, I wanted to share it because that's what podcasters do. If you're not into sharing, you're not a podcaster. Like, you know, that's one of the key tenets of being a podcaster, is wanting to share experiences with people. And initially it was just to learn. I wanted to learn. And now it's gone from that to more of a, I want to build a catalog of great interviews with great podcasters that are doing amazing things, even if it's just on the tiniest of scale, so that I can continue to get bigger and more fascinating names, and I can draw other people's stories. Like, I didn't reach out to you. You, from however it came out, you found this show and was like, hey, I would like to do that show. That this podcast right now, this recording today, is a success for me because I'm gathering interest. People are wanting to tell their stories and share their stories and be part of this huge pod journey of my own. And that to me is a success. I look at number. I don't even record. We record numbers for Ritual Misery, and we publicly display them on the web for anybody to go look how much Patreon money we're getting, how many viewers we have, what are all of our metrics of success on that, like every possible metric we could possibly have. We put it on a Google Docs or a Google Sheet that we leave out publicly. Like, anybody can view it. This show, I don't even record the number of people that are listening. I don't try to push my Patreon. I don't do any of that because that's not what this show is about. And my measure of success for this show now is to make that turn to where I'm getting people that are coming to me wanting to share their journey, and they find value, like you said. And as long as that's happening, which is just really starting to happen after 20 episodes or whatever, that to me is the success for this show.
Very cool.
We have one last thing that I do on the show, and that is, sometimes it's the hardest part. I can see it in some podcaster's face that they don't want to divulge this or they're trying to restrain themselves because they have so much to say. But as far as other podcasters go, you've been doing this for a while. What advice do you have for newbies and for veterans of podcasting?
Oh, God. I don't even know if I can...
See, that's the look right there.
I don't even know if I have anything interesting. I mean, I gave my couple tips. I gave the one on the couple main ones I wanted to say were, utilize your podcast endeavor in as many ways as you can to help build your skill set, mm-hmm. and make yourself more marketable and more interesting and more skilled. Teach yourself, learn things while you're doing it. And then if nobody listens, then, well, hey, now you know how to use Adobe Photoshop and because you made your logo. Cool. Right. There you go. And then the other one is, you know, constantly reevaluate. I think the biggest challenge, and this is just speaking from personal experience, is the biggest challenge for me has been constantly reevaluating why you do what you do. So if I decide in 6 months that what I really want and need out of a podcast is for me to showcase my personality and be zany and be able to joke around and be really casual and just be more of a comedy kind of bent or whatever, then yeah, right now I'm getting paid to do a professional podcast, and that's incredible and that's a dream. But that may not 6 months from now, and maybe it will, but that may not at that time fit my needs. So at that point, I'll have to step back and say, like, okay, well, is this doing what I want it to do? Like, a podcast, all podcasts are not created equal. All podcast endeavors are not created equal. Every show you do is going to be different, and at all times, you'll be doing it for different reasons. Mm-hmm. Year one of Unqualified Gamers versus year three, totally different. Year one of Game Life Balance US versus year two, totally different. I mean, about a dozen episodes into the Curiosity podcast, I'm betting if you listen 6 months from now, it's going to sound way different than where it is now. Mm. A lot of YouTubers will tell you the same thing. And you just need to be aware of that. And sometimes it takes a moment of just stepping back and just being like, why am I doing what I'm doing? It's hard to be self-aware all the time. Mm-hmm. So put a Google Calendar reminder. Put a reminder for yourself once every 2 months. Just check in. Say, all right, why am I doing this podcast again? Why do I like doing it? What is it doing for me? What value is it adding to my life? And is this the value I wanted to add to my life right now? And kind of see where you're at. The same thing happened with acting classes with me, actually. I was in literally like four or five improv classes at the same time. And I got burned out. I just stopped going to a couple of them, even though I paid for all of them. I was just like, I can't, like, this is all I do. Mm. And I was so burned out, I stopped taking improv classes for like 4 years. And then in January, I was talking to my fiance, and I was like, dude, you know, I'm liking this podcast I do with John, but like, I need some new creative challenge. I went back to improv classes. Mm. You know, at one point it was overwhelming and I had to just take a break. And at one point I needed it because I needed to feed me. So I think that's the hardest thing. And I don't necessarily have a skeleton key, like a magic solution to always being self-aware, but it's worth checking in with yourself once in a while to make sure that you're doing what you want to be doing. And that applies to outside podcasting too. It applies to any hobby you have, honestly. It applies to video games. There are times in the last few years where I've said to myself, do I need video games in my life at all? Like, literally, I almost sold my consoles just because I'm just like, do I really need these? And the answer is yes, I do. But there was a possibility there for a while that there wasn't. And, you know, like, now I play Final Fantasy 14. It's a massively multiplayer online RPG. I do ask myself once in a while, I'm like, is this the only game I want to ever play? Because it's all I do now, right? Like, that's my only game right now. At some point, I will probably look and say, you know what? I want some variety, or I want to travel, or whatever, and I'll cancel my subscription. And I can always pick it up later. Yep. But just the self-awareness is my big advice, I guess.
Since we mentioned this many times, I learned so much while I was in Korea doing improv for 6 months. It's an amazing experience. You might even get some people that you can get on your podcast, and because I've had a couple of those on Ritual Misery, and they're great.
Yeah, to me, the best part is making friends. I've always made friends in improv classes because they're always nice and they're always pretty open and they're pretty agreeable. And so, yeah, I think I always recommend improv classes. They're always fun.
I'm going to recommend people check you out. Cody Goff, where can people find you? Where, I mean, of all the websites that you've said during this episode, where are you currently at that people need to go right now? Well, as soon as the theme music's over, and they can go right now and find you.
Yeah, my favorite social media network is Twitter by far.
Of course.
And I'm on there all the time. I'm at Producer Cody, and you can just follow me on Twitter at Producer Cody. Tweet at me, hang out. It's cool. I retweet a lot of stupid stuff, but I tweet a lot of funny stuff, I like to think. So I often post links to what I'm working on there. And you can find the Curiosity Podcast if you go to curiosity.com/podcast. Or I would also recommend, and Curiosity is a really cool app. Like, to be completely honest, I work for them because I love the product. I love the product. Go to the App Store or Google Play or whatever for your Android or iOS. Just download Curiosity is the name of the app. And you just learn something new every day. And it's short and easy and digestible. And if you don't like the top topic, swipe up. Go to the next topic. And so there's a handful of topics we push out every day, but there's thousands of articles on our site that you can search for. And you can listen to the podcast through the app or on curiosity.com. But curiosity.com/podcast is the main spot. Also available on literally everywhere. iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Pocket Casts, Overcast, like, I mean, basically anywhere. So
all the
it's
places.
Just called Curiosity Podcast.
Excellent. And you can find me on Twitter at Ethan Kane. You can follow the show on Twitter at UndauntedCast. You can cruise on by ritualmisery.com to find out everything else that I'm involved in, including the charity work we're getting ready to ramp up for New Year's Eve. We a 27-hour New Year's Eve streamathon. No one should be alone on New Year's Eve. Thank you to Kevin MacLeod for allowing us to use your music. For me, for Cody, and for all the aspiring and veteran podcasters out there, thank you for joining us on this journey.